from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Federal scientists say they will investigate why an unusual number of gray whales are washing up dead on West Coast beaches. About 75 whales have been found dead so far this year on the coasts of California, Oregon, Washington, and Alaska, the most since the year 2000. And in the Bay Area alone, at least 13 dead whales have washed ashore. Joining us in studio is Bill Keener. He's research associate with the Marine Mammal Center. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael.
See if we can get to why this is happening. But first, let's just talk about the numbers, because the official record has it as about 15 now in the Bay Area. There were just, I believe, three more that washed up in Alaska. And as I said in the introduction, this is the most since 2000. Federal declaration now of an unusual mortality event. What does that mean, that we've got a wildlife emergency?
Well, there's definitely cause for concern, because the Marine Mammal Center, and for, you know, listeners who haven't been out there, it's located in Sausalito in the headlands, and there's a very large team of veterinarians and animal care scientists that go out, and they actually do necropsies, which is in a...
It's like an autopsy, really.
Yeah, yeah, postmortem examination of each of these whales. And there's been about 13 recently just in the Bay Area. So the 70 you talked about were the U.S. West Coast, and there's another 75 in Mexico, and then there's some more in Canada. So it's more...
It's a crisis, really.
It's more than 150. So we haven't seen this level of strandings, deaths of gray whales since the year 1999. There, 1999 and 2000, there was a big spike in deaths, very similar to the
El Nino year.
That's true. One of the things that they looked at then was whether these animals were emaciated or not, whether they had a sufficient blubber layer to make their very long 10,000-mile migration. And what they're seeing this time is that some of the whales are certainly showing that same malnutrition, that same loss of blubber layer. However, out of these, say, last 13 that we've seen and the Marine Mammal Center's necropsied, five of them have been killed by a ship strike. So it's not just one cause that's operating here.
And there's just not enough to eat during the last feeding season when they're up in the Arctic, apparently. That's why they're so malnourished and skinny. But many, we were talking about numbers that may exceed what you've just noted, because many of them sink or they just wash up in remote areas and they aren't recorded.
Exactly right. So they've done some studies in which about 10%, they think, of animals are actually seen on beaches. So 90% could be lost to science. And then, of course, when you're talking about remote beaches in Alaska or, say, British Columbia, you're not getting nearly the coverage we do in California, where lots of people are very active in reporting these carcasses to the proper authorities, such as the Marine Mammal Center or the California Academy of Sciences.
The number of whales, maybe because they were taken off the endangered species list, may just have reached an unsustainable number at this point. And the reality is, everybody's, of course, pointing their finger at climate change and the ice melting, and that seems to be a major part of this as well.
It could be. So there's a couple of different theories operating here. One is that there's simply not enough food because of climate change. For instance, in 2017 and 18 in the winter, there really wasn't ice in the Bering Sea, which is very unusual. And so that could have effects all the way down the food chain. Gray whales are kind of unusual because they feed on the bottom. They're not eating fish up at the surface or in midwater, but they go down to the bottom to eat on little mysid shrimp. And
these are amphipods, as they call them.
Exactly. And so what could be happening is that that loss of ice changes the amount of sunlight in the Arctic, and that could shift the food resources up there. And that's something that could be responsible. On the other hand, there are so many gray whales now, there's 27,000 was the last count, that you have a very small bump in the food resources, and it can have a pretty significant effect on their populations. So both things could be operating.
Many whales, too little of those shrimps that we're talking about. But it's also possible that it's reached carrying capacity.
Well, that's the point of the 27,000. It's a little unclear exactly what their historical level was before whaling. but they're probably approaching somewhere around 30,000 would probably be historical numbers is one of the estimates. So remember, though, that some of these deaths are not due to malnutrition. We've got ship strike as another operating factor here because these animals move right along the coastline, and they're really subject to a lot of vessel traffic as they move all the way up and down the coast.
Which has been of concern with this whale over in Alameda. I mean, getting hit by ships. This is not a gray whale, right? It's a different migratory.
Right. Every species. We've got, you know, four different cetacean species in San Francisco Bay now. And I remember not that long ago when I started with the Marine Mammal Center as a volunteer in the 70s, there were no cetaceans in San Francisco Bay. You wouldn't see one. But now there's harbor porpoises, bottlenose dolphins, gray whales come in, and now humpback whales for the last 3 years have been coming in pretty significant numbers into San Francisco Bay to feed on anchovy. Now, this one in Alameda is unique. We've never seen a sick whale in San Francisco Bay, a humpback whale, before. We've had lost ones, like Humphrey back in 1985. And then in 2007, we had Delta and Dawn, the mother and calf, that went all the way up to Sacramento. But this animal that's in Alameda is very skinny. It's so that same kind of emaciation that's showing in the gray whales, but probably for a different cause. There's plenty of food here on the California coast for the humpbacks, but this particular animal looks unhealthy. It's also its skin even looks unhealthy, so we're very concerned about it.
I want to talk about that whale, but is it possible the food is simply not as nutritious as it was? They're feeding a lot more on krill, for example.
Well, no. The humpback whale, in fact, is a really interesting animal because...
I'm back to the gray whales.
The gray whales, yeah. It's possible that what's going on in the Arctic is affecting them, as we discussed. So that's one of the first things that some of these scientists will be looking at, along with trying to figure out the cause of death for each one of these individual whales.
At this point, can you let us know perhaps why, is this a canary in the coal mine? I mean, are these gray whales maybe telling us something that we need to know about the whole ecosystem?
Well, that, of course. I mean, that is one of the big reasons for the Marine Mammal Center's existence is we're all subject and dependent upon the ocean for good life on land. And what goes on in the ocean really does affect us. And so absolutely we want to not only have this canary in the coal mine and look at that, but we actually want to have that canary thrive. And so by studying this, hopefully we'll try to get some answers. And that's what the Federal Declaration of the Unusual Mortality Event was about, is to release more funds so that a team of scientists would be put together to study this.
Let's go back to the humpback whale, because it's rare for these whales to swim into much shallower waters, as you said earlier. And the fact of the matter is that a lot of people are saying maybe we should try to lead it to the open seas.
Yeah, well, that's a difficult issue. So we're in touch with NOAA, the stranding coordinator, on a daily basis about this particular humpback whale. Some of the locals have taken it to calling it Allie. And the problem with trying to herd it out is that it's not like when they herded Humphrey or Delta and Dawn in a very narrow river system. This is going to be in the open bay, and it's very stressful on the animal. So it's unclear whether that would really work very easily.
Well, there are many gray whales that are washing up dead, many that can't even be counted, as I said, because they're sinking or they're washing up in remote areas. And there is a federal plan to investigate. Certainly want to hear what you, our listeners, have to say about this. People do care about these whales and care deeply about them. And those of you in Alameda who have seen that malnourished and skinny-looking and pasty, unfortunately, whale without its colors and so forth may want to comment as well on what you think ought to be done about that whale. Remember all too well Humphrey, as many of you do, and the attempt to get Humphrey out to the open sea. Let me hear from our listeners. In fact, I invite you to join us right now at our toll-free number. The number to call is 866-733-6786. Please feel free to be part of the program, and you can join us toll-free at 866-733-6786. And you can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org. So let's talk a little bit with you, Bill Keener. Bill Keener's here with us in studio, research associate with the Marine Mammal Center, about what the feds need to find out here. There's a lot to find out here.
Yeah, there is a lot to find out. And you really have to, it's a big operation to do a single necropsy on a whale, and to try to do it for all of the whales is really important. One of the differences between the unusual mortality event, that spike in whale deaths back in 1999 and 2000, was that it was hard to get to all those whales and do necropsies. Here, 20 years on, the Marine Mammal Center is a lot more prepared for this kind of thing, as are other members of the stranding network up and down the U.S. West Coast.
But forgive me, back in 1999, the whales were not as emaciated as they are now, really.
Many were emaciated. There was also ship strike and other things as well. It was a mix of
things.
Do
we have more emaciation now?
Well, so out of these, we can look at the figures here. So, you know, out of these 13, we've got 8 that are emaciated and 5 hit by ship.
Let's go to our callers. And we bring on Jill, who joins us from Sacramento. Jill, welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you. My question is about the necropsies. I'm wondering whether or not you found minute particles of plastic in their stomachs.
No, that plastic hasn't been an issue.
Okay, good to know.
Okay, though her question certainly gets right to the heart of the fact that we have serious problems with plastic.
No doubt about it. And certainly some whales, particularly in some other parts of the world, have come up completely, their digestive tract full of plastic, particularly in some species like sperm whale. We had an adult male sperm whale strand on the beaches in Pacific a few years ago, and I attended that necropsy. But no plastic. It had squid beaks in its gut, which is exactly what you'd want to find. That's its natural prey, but no plastic. So certainly it can happen, but that's not really been a significant issue for these whales.
It seems pretty logical that starvation is at the heart of this, and particularly that climate change is connected, but we really don't know at this point, do we?
Well, that's right. So that's why I brought up the Arctic ice, the ice-free winter in the Bering Sea. Now, the gray whales feed in both the Bering Sea and even farther north, way up in the Chukchi Sea, which is above Alaska and
Russia.
They
need a lot of blubber to travel down, too.
To travel back. So
I mean, travel back.
Exactly.
Return,
what
yeah.
happens is they come down to Mexico to their breeding lagoons in the Baja Peninsula. They're not feeding there at all. There's no food for them. They're fasting for 6 months. So it's the return journey where they really need that last bit of fat to propel themselves all the way north.
Ralph wants to know if there is more ship traffic than, say, 20 years ago that's causing ship strikes. Are there any suggested solutions for this?
Yeah, the ship strike is a really major issue, and there's a couple of things. One is that NOAA has worked with mariners and the marine mammal science community to adjust shipping lanes along our coast so that you're not running into areas where, say, blue whales or humpback whales are feeding. There's also entanglements is another issue. A lot of these whales are getting entangled in, say, crab pot lines and stuff, and trying to deal with that. So trying to, have policies where you don't have crabbing seasons at certain areas where there's lots of feeding whales is another thing we can do. Now, in addition, NOAA, our local NOAA sanctuary, is working on slowing down the vessels. Just simply slowing the speed of these ships coming into San Francisco Bay can make a difference. And that's one of the things that we're working on here at the Marine Mammal Center is looking at all these humpback whales coming right into the gate. It's very narrow there. It's 1 mile wide. And when you've got ships passing by, there's very little room to maneuver. So one of the things we want to do is study exactly how close these ships are getting to the humpback whales and seeing if we can't figure out a new way of having the ships be able to slow down even coming through the gate.
The ferries have been warned about this.
Well, the ferries, yeah, know about it, and certainly we contact the Coast Guard as soon as we know there's a whale in the bay, and they put it out through vessel traffic service. So mariners are, alerted to that. But still, there's lots of people that still need education about the fact there's whales in the bay. There's a lot of, small boats even.
Usually you don't see them in the San Francisco Bay, do you?
Well, we have been, though, the last three summers. Humpback whales have been really coming in and feeding inside the bay all the way to Alcatraz, Angel Island. They've even made it around, all the way around to the ballpark. I mean, they're definitely in the bay during the summer now.
Our guest is Bill Keener. He's here with us in studio. He's with the Marine Mammal Center in Sausalito. We're talking about the unusual number of gray whales washing up dead on West Coast beaches this year, and also about that humpback whale over there in Alameda. Let me get another caller on. That's you, Steve. You're on.
Oh, hi. I am a volunteer at Onyango State Park, which is a major rookery for elephant seals. And this year, there were a high number of fatalities among newborn. They've been weaned, so maybe they're 2 to 4 months old. There's a high number of fatalities. I also went to Piedras Blancas, which is another rookery in the Central California, and I counted a dozen dead elephant seals from standing right there at the railing. And now they're marine mammals, just like whales, and they're out in the ocean, the same ocean that the whales are swimming in. And so I'm wondering if you've investigated any connection with the elephant seal population and the whale.
Oh, well, Steve, thank you for that question. No, I had not really heard that or whether there's a connection there. From what it sounded like you were saying, that these were pups that were dying. Is that what you're noticing, an increase in the deaths of young ones, pups?
They had not been to sea yet. They were just recently born, but there were a number of elephant seals who I would say were at least a year plus. There's one that crawled all the way up on the beach and hid himself or herself underneath the bushes, and her carcass is there today, just rotting away.
Now, there may indeed be a connection, but when Bill Keener mentioned pups, the whales are not only, we're talking about a higher mortality rate for the calves too, aren't we?
Well, so one of the things that's going on is that they had a lower number of calves being born this year. So the effect of the population is not just the ship strike or malnutrition, but what happens is that the mothers may not give birth that year, or they may not have enough energy to become pregnant. And so what happens is the population can take a dip from that as well.
Well, let me thank you for the call, Steve. And this sounds like something that Steve brought up that should be investigated.
Yeah, and certainly NOAA and the Stranding Network folks do look at pinnipeds, seals, and sea lions. And, for instance, there is a current unusual mortality event now for Guadalupe fur seals along our coast. So they certainly can look at elephant seals as well and see if that's something that's necessary.
And Will wants to know, what's the policy of dealing with whale carcasses?
Well, there's a couple things. Locally in San Francisco Bay, often what happens is the Marine Mammal Center, working with their partner, the California Academy of Sciences, will tow a whale, have a whale towed to Angel Island, where there's a remote beach where they can perform this post-mortem examination, and then the carcass just naturally decomposes. In some other places, you can't move the whale, and so it just will sort of sit and decompose. But it's part of the natural process, and as long as people don't get too close to it, it can be a bit of a smelly affair sometimes.
Listener named Mary Jane writes, last month, 22 shipping firms were recognized for voluntarily slowing their fleets to 10 knots or slower outside the Golden Gate, specifically to prevent ship strikes, so their effort should be acknowledged. And we'll bring in more of our callers. Let me go next to Oakland, and Dell joins us. Dell, welcome.
Well, hey, how are you? I'm fourth generation Bay Area, and I love the Marine Mammal Center. I've been going there since I was a kid. I think that it's a great great rescue center. My question is, how Fukushima has been putting radiation into the oceans, and it's been tested that our fish have it. Could that be affecting some of our marine mammals?
Well, the whales that we're talking about here for this, the gray whales, they feed in the Arctic, and I don't know if there is any link between the Fukushima radiation and which is in very small particles, getting that far up into the Arctic. They have shown it to be in some big fish that sort of move around in the ocean over by Japan and then out into the Central Pacific. But that's not what the gray whales are feeding on. So I would doubt that that is related.
Yeah, I remember after Fukushima, we talked about that, and there didn't seem to be much of a connection. But thank you for the question, Del. Good to hear from you. A listener tweets, could there be changes in the current strength that makes it harder for the whales to swim?
Changes in the current what?
Changes in the current strength.
Oh, the currents. I don't think there's been changes in the currents. I really don't think that's a cause either. I think when you're looking at their either this ship strike, which is a significant factor, or their emaciation, it's probably not just currents.
And here's Maya. Maya, thanks for waiting. You want to bring a noise into this discussion, please. Oh, I'm sorry. I've got Daniel from San Rafael on. Go ahead, Daniel.
Yeah, my question is, has anyone considered the geomagnetic effects of our poles shifting in migration and food migrations?
That is a great question for the new investigative team that NOAA is putting together for this UME, because I hadn't really thought of that one.
That's one of the things we hope they'll find out, Daniel, and thanks for bringing it to our attention. Now I'm going to go to Malia. Malia, join us. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, my question is about the noise pollution from the increased shipping traffic around the world. I had seen a documentary a while ago that because of the whales' sonar means of communication that are very sensitive, all of the noise from the freights is causing them to go slowly insane, beach themselves, swim up rivers, etc. So I'm wondering if you can comment on that.
Yeah, so it's really good to remember that these animals are acoustic beings. They don't really use their sight like we do. Their hearing is what's critical for their survival. And you've got two different kinds of animals out there. The dolphins and porpoises use sonar, that is directed beams of sound, to sense their prey or communicate. But the gray whales and humpback whales don't use that. They listen, though, very carefully. So when you've got a noisy ocean, and it has gotten noisier with a lot more vessel traffic, it really can disturb them. What amazes me is to see humpback whales willingly come into San Francisco Bay, which is extremely noisy compared to being out in the ocean. But they're willing to do it because that's where food is. So these animals are driven also by the need to eat.
Let me thank you for the call, Malia, and we'll go right to another caller who is also talking about causes. Marissa, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I wanted to ask if the animals in the water are being tested for chemicals. A lot of the chemicals that humans are being exposed to, perfluorinated, persistent chemicals, flame retardants, pesticides from the Delta, you know, potentially affecting their brain development, their hormones. You know, it'd be an interesting study to see how we humans align with these animals in terms of these exposures.
There's a lot of toxic stuff in the ocean, unfortunately.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that is absolutely something they do look at as part of this necropsy. They take tissue samples, blubber samples, and they can run tests on them and look for that. And in fact, you can find there's differences between marine mammals living in different areas. Say in San Francisco Bay, you might get certain kinds of toxins related to sort of more industrial, whereas in, say, Monterey Bay, you might get more agricultural pesticide-related toxins. So absolutely, this is something they're looking at.
Let me thank you for the call. This is you had said earlier we have an estimated 27,000 now out there in the waters. This is the highest population, I believe, since 67, and it lost its status as endangered species largely because of what was done about whale hunting and whale killing. Is it possible that we could be seeing something that would maybe lead back to an endangered species for whales?
Well, perhaps, but we have to go back and look 20 years ago to the 1999 and 2000 spike. It's very similar to what's happening now. And after that two-year spike in deaths, the population rebounded and came all the way back. So I think next year is going to be critical to look at to see if this happens again like it did sort of over a two-year period. But then the population could rebound as well. So, yeah, we'd have to see. But you're right. The fact that we've taken that pressure off these animals, humpbacks as well as gray whales, in terms of stopping hunting them, is a very significant thing we've done. I mean, the last whaling station in the United States was in San Francisco Bay. A lot of people don't know that. It was in Richmond. And until 1971, they were going out right outside the Golden Gate and killing, harpooning whales and dragging them in to the processing station at Point Richmond.
Chris wants to know, is the whale in Alameda being fed?
It is not being fed, and it would be a difficult task to do. They can eat, say, 2,000-3,000 pounds of fish a day, and that would be something we just simply can't do, and you couldn't force feed it anyway.
Here's Arthur. Arthur, thank you for waiting. Join us.
Yes. The sound in San Francisco Bay is certainly a problem, but maybe we can convert this into a asset. More precisely, we know whales are sensitive to sound. Can we require that ships and large boats moving fast in San Francisco Bay have calibrated sound emitters that the whales would hear and avoid?
So, Arthur, that's a really interesting question, and some people have looked at that before, and it's really complicated. So part of the issue is that they've tried different sounds, including trying to scare them with orca sounds and so forth. But the problem is that some of the whales, like the blue whales, are just the biggest thing in the ocean. They still think they're the biggest thing in the ocean, and they just ignore it. Others are attracted to it, and so it's a real mix of what you get. There's no easy solution. There's no simple sound that you can emit. And if the whale is straight in front of the ship, you know, it can't hear the screws turning of the propellers as well as being on the side. So there's all kinds of complications when it comes down to trying to change the sound that the ship is putting out.
Let me thank you for the call, Arthur. What's the timeline on NOAA and the feds?
So they're starting on this now. They declared the unusual mortality event on May 31st, and they're gearing up with a team of investigators to go look at this. But this could take a while. It could take a year or two before there are some answers on this.
I hope the science is better than what we're getting from the president's tweets. He just said something, I guess, about moon being part of Mars or Mars being part of the moon earlier today. It was on CNN. Thank you, Bill Kaner. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate being here.
Bill Kaner, research associate with the Marine Mammal Center. And we'll keep track of this. We'll keep on the story. And we're going to actually talk about another story, the birth of this country, when we return. Rick Atkinson, Pulitzer Prize winning historian, will be joining us. Be talking about his new book, which is called The British Are Coming, The War for America, Lexington to Princeton, 1775 to 1777. It's volume one of his Revolution trilogy. Stay tuned. That's up ahead. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, we thank you for listening. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.